everyone, and welcome to July's Hancock Horizon Investments Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank provides this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or any of its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to David_Lundgren, that's LUNDGREN, at hancockbank.com, and we'll take those questions at the end of the call. Okay, today I have John Fortwood, who is Chief Investment Officer, and I have David Lundgren, who is the Director of Equities and Research for Hancock Horizon Investments. And with that, Dave, I'm going to pass it on to you, and you can start with a question.
Great. Thank you, Ashley. And good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us yet for another installment of our monthly call. And John, another monthly call and another discussion about Greece. Go ahead and maybe bring us up to date on where things stand.
This situation will probably last much longer than we would all like when you really get down to it. It's, you know, Greece is of the most immediate concern in the Eurozone, and then, of course, we've got the rest of the pigs that, you know, will have their own issues, I guess, that will come up periodically before this thing is over, and it'll probably take quite a while, but it looks like a temporary bailout for Greece has been agreed upon, but, you know, the as they say, the devil is in the details, and over the weekend, it looks like the credit rating agencies, according to some of the news reports this morning, are beginning to think that if this particular agreement is crafted correctly, they may not call it an actual default. You know, they S&P, I know for sure, had threatened to call any sort of restructuring of Greek debt or extending Greek debt maturity as a default, which would call into question, of course, the you know, credit default swap insurance contracts and that sort of thing. But anyway, this morning it looks like they might be coming up with something that, to use that the phrase everybody's tired of hearing, kicking the can down the road a little further until they finally come up with a plan that you know, will get Greece fixed. But it will probably require a default or of some kind as far as Greece is concerned, something more involved than what currently is the case. But at least it looks like they're beginning to come to some sort of agreement that will, you know, allow the Greek problem to just simmer for a while. And but we'll have to come back to it later, probably.
So not the last we hear about this.
No, I doubt it. They believe the requirements might put Greece into a permanent state of depression. And so you have to wonder, you know, how long the Greek populace will put up with it.
And, John, you referenced pigs in your answer. For some of our listeners that might not know what that is, can you explain?
Yeah, it's Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. Right now, Italy is the strongest of the group, but Italy was downgraded fairly recently. You know, after Greece, you've got Portugal, which may be in as bad a shape as Greece, and after Portugal comes Spain. And basically, if Portugal goes, then that really impacts Spain a great deal, because Spain has a lot of connections to Portugal. And then, of course, Ireland's already in pretty bad shape, and Ireland probably, without restructuring, cannot grow its way out of the problem either. So Ireland is kind of like a high-quality Greece, I guess, at this point, based on the research reports.
Okay. Let's shift back to the U.S. And I guess on the home front, we're continuing to get mixed signals on the economy. And I know in the past you've discussed the new normal, an environment of below trend line growth. Is this softness that we're experiencing now, is it currently just part of the new normal?
It would seem to be. If you look at the script that was written by Reinhardt and Rogoff in their book, This Time is Different, 8 Centuries of Financial Folly, we seem to be following along in the lines of the crisis aftermath that they described in their book. And normally that takes, based on their historical work, 5 to 7 years to work through. So by those standards, we could guess that somewhere between 2014 and 2016, things might be a little more normal than they are now. Of course, nobody knows really for sure, but what it suggests is that we're going to have below average GDP, at least relative to what everybody would like to think and relative to what we've been used to over time, you know, that 3% GDP growth trend may be more like 2% plus instead of, you know, 3 or 3% plus for quite some time. One thing that's happened recently that's a little bit disturbing in terms of our, you know, long-run prospects, the money velocity has been declining again. You know, money velocity crashed after the during the 2008 crash, then sort of flatlined for a while, but now money velocity has been declining again, you know, which indicates there's plenty of money out there in the economy, but nobody wants to use it. So, you know, until that situation changes, then we're probably looking at, you know, relatively slow GDP growth for a long time.
Can you put some numbers around that? What do you think second quarter GDP will come in at? And then what are the leading indicators saying about the third quarter?
The leading indicators are still positive. Some of the really sensitive economic indicators that come out on a week-by-week basis, like those produced by the Chicago Fed and the Philadelphia Fed, are suggesting okay growth, but a little bit soft, which does make you wonder if the projections for 3% GDP growth in the third quarter are correct. But we have had a little tick back up in the ISM, you know, manufacturing indices. So there is reason to believe that the third quarter is going to be better than the second quarter. But second quarter estimates now are like 1.5 to 2%. So, you know, that's not very good. It looks like the whole year is going to be probably somewhat less than it was last year. Last year was about 2.8, 2.7. You know, this year may be a little bit less than that. But it does look like, you know, the third quarter is going to be better than the second.
Okay. Well, one thing that might help, hopefully, is that we saw a pretty significant decline in oil prices and, in turn, gas prices in the month of June. Will this result in a big boost to consumer spending? And then also, what about other commodity prices? How have they fared?
According to the research we see on, you know, gasoline prices, oil prices, and consumer spending, there does seem to be a connection of some sort. It probably varies over time as to how significant that is. But during the first part of this year, when gas prices rose, particularly at the lower end of the income spectrum, it apparently had a fairly immediate impact on retail sales and consumer discretionary purchases. So if the price of gas does fall, and of course it has, then that's probably going to add a little bit to economic growth going forward. Some economists think that perhaps the price of gasoline rising in the first part of the year completely offset the break anybody got from a reduction in FICA taxes. There's some talk this morning about FICA taxes, that FICA tax break, which is, what, 2%, I think, about that being renewed and continued into next year in case the third and fourth quarters are maybe a little bit softer than what some people had anticipated. But certainly, I guess, it'll add some, you know, something to the economy going forward.
What about other commodities?
Commodities took a hit recently, as everybody knows. And I think perhaps they've been rallying a bit lately. I haven't really kept up with commodities that much. I'm really more focused on what the bank credit analyst research paper suggested might happen to commodities a couple of years from now when we get declines in workforces and, you know, maybe some less rapid growth in the emerging markets, you know, suggesting that commodity investments are perhaps on their last legs, you know, in terms of, you know, a really strong upcycle.
Okay. June was an interesting month for stocks, to say the least. June ended up having a negative result, as did May, so it was back-to-back. Hadn't seen back-to-back months in quite a while. Here are some of the numbers. The S&P 500 returned minus 1.7%, and that brings the year-to-date number to still pretty attractive, 6%. The quarter overall finished at a pretty ho-hum, 0.1%, you know, but it wasn't a straight line by any means. And really, the last four trading days of June saved the month and saved the quarter from being a negative quarter. And we're headed into earnings season, and despite some of the weaker economic news, earnings should be very good. How are companies still producing strong earnings in light of the softer economic news? And give us your outlook for the next few months.
Probably the real key to the strong rebound in corporate earnings the last couple of years is due to profit margin expansion. I mean, profit margins expanded enormously. Now, that's not to say that revenues didn't come back strongly after that hole we fell into in 2008. That's true. But profit margins have been very, very high for the last several years. Now, the interesting thing now is that profit margins are about as high as they ever have been, and there has been a tendency in the past for profit margin trends to be cyclical. It goes up and down, and you have a reversion to the mean, as the economists like to say. Well, since profit margins are about as high as they ever have been, we probably shouldn't expect a substantial acceleration in profit margins from this point. So if profit margins begin to trail off a bit or stay the same, at the same time that we see a lack, not a lack, but a deceleration in revenue growth and a deceleration in profit growth, it probably suggests that going forward, even though earnings may be positive, earnings may not be quite as strong as some of the bottom-up analysts out there are projecting. You've got a pretty big disparity between the top-down strategy type of estimate using some of the ideas that I just mentioned, and the individual analysts who tend to be more optimistic. So maybe it's something in the middle. You know, anyway, it looks like profit margins are still going to be fairly high for a while, and it looks like earnings are going to be positive. The only question is how positive they're going to be. You know, in the long run, earnings tend to grow roughly in line with nominal GDP growth. And Ned Davis did some interesting work and found out that the correlation coefficient was 0.54, which is not perfect between profits and nominal GDP growth, but it's a fairly positive statistical relationship. And since World War II, nominal GDP has grown about 6.7% annualized, and profits have grown about 6.7% annualized for the same time period. So if we're going back into say trend line profit growth, we're going back into something in the single digits. And if we go back into something in the single digits, and I'm looking out longer term than just, you know, the next couple of quarters, if you go back into a single digit earnings growth in a low GDP growth environment, it probably suggests that you won't get a lot of PE multiple expansion, and you have to depend on earnings to really drive the boat, you know, drive the stock boat. So that probably means that, you know, returns going forward from this point, somewhere in the single digits, I guess, and that probably looks reasonable, too, when you consider that, you know, valuation measures today suggest total returns for the market. And I'm talking about just, you know, the S&P 500 index, you know, the broad market, probably somewhere in the single digits. So it looks okay. It just doesn't look, you know, tremendously exciting at this point. But any, positive.
Any thoughts on just the short term? Any, like, what do we get short term indicators? More volatility. I mean, it's been a
short term
couple months.
Yeah, short term actually looks more positive in the last 2 weeks than it did in the previous 2 or 3 months. So it looks like we have some sort of rally in progress now that might last for a while. You know, there's nothing out there that suggests we're about to roll over and die.
Okay. You know, stocks had an interesting month, but so did bonds, especially the last few days of June. Again, we saw the 10-year jump 30 basis points. The 5-year jumped 40 basis points in just, you know, 3 or 4 days. Did the bond market pick up on something, or was the move related to the Greek bailout in any way?
It's probably a combination of issues. Some of it could have been related to the Greek bailout and the likelihood that that would go through. The end of QE2 is often talked about as maybe a reason. You would think that would already have been in the market, given that everybody was aware of it for quite some time. But I heard a report over the weekend indicating that the Fed, at one of the last auctions, was buying about 20% of the issues out there. And so, you know, the fact that, you know, that buying won't be there in the next month or so may have caused a little bit of a backup in interest rates too. Also, the fact that some of the economic news has turned out to be not as dire as some people were projecting, I guess, even a month or so back. So, or at least, I guess, the psychology is not as bad as it was, you know, looking at the economy of our month or so in the past. So all of that probably had some impact on rates. But, you know, unless we really see something happening in terms of, you know, wage gains or a massive turnaround in the velocity of money, we're probably still looking at a fairly low inflation environment and probably not much upside in interest rates for a while.
Okay, great. Lots of news coming out of Washington, obviously, in regards to both the deficit and the debt ceiling. You know, this could be quite a battle. And really, I have two questions. The first one of the bigger debates over the whole deficit issue and debt ceiling issue is whether or not you raise taxes as part of reducing the deficit. Any thoughts on how that one plays out?
Taxes are probably going up in some fashion. It's just a matter of when and how long it takes. Apparently, a lot of the tax cuts, so to speak, that were talked about during the recent negotiations were really at the margin. They were figuring out ways to remove this loophole, so to speak, or that one, and at the same time figure out a way not to really change marginal tax rates. Consequently, analysts who apparently have some indication of what's going on inside these talks tell us that nothing really serious has been discussed at the moment or to date to really deal with the structural problem. So that still is yet to be addressed and probably won't be addressed in a serious way until after the election, given the politics of the situation. But long term, there's probably no way we can get out of raising taxes in some fashion, and you might even see something as radical for us as a value-added tax like they have in Europe. At least that's what the long-term forecasters are thinking about when they crunch the numbers.
Okay. And the second question is about the debt ceiling. The Treasury Department has placed an August 2nd deadline on Congress to raise the debt ceiling. Treasury urged Congress, and I quote, to avoid the catastrophic economic and market consequences of a default crisis by raising the statutory debt limit in a timely manner. What happens if the August 2nd deadline isn't met? Is there a real chance of default? And you know, is the Treasury's plea political posturing, or is there some real concern there?
Well, over the weekend, the news suggested that some kind of deal had been reached and an agreement would be finalized before the August 2nd deadline. Then this morning, if I heard the news correctly, and, you know, Dave, you might help me with this, the latest piece indicated that, no, they didn't have a deal, and they were still talking.
Right.
So it's hard to really know what's going on. Somebody has suggested that there might be, on the bright side, there might be a difference that the market would recognize between a technical default and an actual default. The thought being that if we defaulted technically but they were working hard on a deal, it might not roil the markets that much. On the other hand, a lot of people have suggested that it would be the end of the world if they didn't reach an agreement by August the 2nd. So I don't know really what the psychology of the market is. If the psychology of the market is really negative in terms of a deal not being reached, then if it's not, we could have some short-term problems.
Right.
You know, but it's really kind of hard to tell. You know, guessing is that they'll come up with something before August the 2nd so the markets won't be tested.
Okay. Let's hope so. We do have a couple of questions that have come in, and just give me a second to get situated. All right, first question, there's a lot of speculation surrounding Treasury Secretary Timmy Geithner's departure from office. What impact would that have on the market if it were to occur?
it seems to me, and I can't prove this statistically, but because you'd have to go back and look at all the administrations in the last, 20, 30 years to see if it's true. But my impression is that the Obama administration has lost more key economic advisors and key members of staff than at this point in the cycle, in the presidential cycle, than has occurred in quite some time, which, might mean several things. I mean, some of these people may have left because they simply got, tired of the grind and wanted to do something else. Others may have a sort of a rats deserting a sinking ship mentality. You don't really know exactly what's going on, but Geithner, I don't think, has been thought particularly highly by anybody, really. At least I haven't seen anything to that that would suggest that. So if he leaves and someone else is appointed, it probably won't make much difference whether he's there or not. But it does appear that he's got something in mind.
Okay. And then there's a follow-up question to that along those same lines. If he does step down, do you have any ideas on who might replace him?
No, not a...
Okay. Another question that came in was in regards to the dollar. Right around all, not I won't say all-time lows, but 25-year lows. Can it go any lower? And then also the second part of that question was, where do you see the dollar going after the debt ceiling is raised, assuming that it will be?
Some of that may be sort of a guess on what might happen short-term. Long-term, if you look at all of the research sources out there, there is a general opinion that the dollar will remain weak and probably in a declining mode relative to a basket of currencies for a very long time. But when you think about the alternatives, the euro wouldn't seem to be a great alternative as a reserve currency, for example, because of all the problems they've got. Then that leaves, China, I suppose. There's no one else out there really to replace the dollar at present as a reserve currency. So my guess is that, the dollar, while it might remain relatively weak for, issues that everybody's aware of, in terms of declining, much beyond where it is now, I would say perhaps not.
Okay. All right. We'll just give it a minute to see if we have any other questions. And we do now.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. And everyone have a good day, and we'll talk to you next month.